We're going to think about freedom, where we get it from, and we're going to drop in on one of Jesus' conversations. There we go. We're up. Jesus' conversations with a woman desperately searching for freedom. But come with me back in history for a little bit to World War II. If you can't see this screen, there is a screen at the back if that helps, so please don't worry about that. World War II, it's the 30th of July 1945, and this is the USS Indianapolis, a battleship returning from a mission in the Pacific, delivering resources to Allied forces. But it's a ship that never made it home, because partway back on the journey it was torpedoed by a Japanese submarine. And in just 12 minutes, of the 1,200 men on board, 300 had died already. The remaining 900 were thrown into the water for 4 days and five nights, without any food, any fresh water, under the blazing sunshine. Only 316 of those survived the lack of food and the sharks, and one of those was a chief medical officer, and I'd love to tell you what he said about it. He said, "There was nothing I could do, nothing but give advice, bury the dead at sea, save the life jackets, and try to keep the men from drinking the water." When the hot sun came out and we were in this crystal clear ocean, we were so thirsty. And you couldn't believe that the ocean wasn't good enough to drink. I had a hard time convincing the men that they shouldn't touch it. The really young ones, well, they'd go first. They'd drink the salt water and they'd go fast. And I can remember beating some of these soldiers with paddles, desperately trying to stop them. You see, what this medical officer knew is that salt water is... it contains four times the amount of salt that we normally get in the human body. And so, well, you drink too much and it starts to shrink your cells. It's so dramatically that your body kind of goes into survival mode. You're desperately trying to get rid of it. And that the more that kicks in, the more fluids you start getting rid of. And so dehydration kicks in and your heart rate increases and you start to feel nauseous. And the more salt water you drink, the more dehydrated you become. Until finally the body's coping mechanism fails and you die. I tell it because as we open up John tonight, he's writing an account for us just like that chief medical officer on board the ship. He's trying to show us how the kind of freedom that the world offers is just like salt water. It looks so good on the surface, but instead of giving the freedom we hope for, it just leads to harm. But hold that thought for a minute, and I wonder, is there are two ways that we can see Jesus. Here's one way. You know, Jesus is the grumpy old man. Let me jump out of the way a little bit more. You know, we can think of Jesus like the harsh, judgmental guy who's exclusive and selective. He's kind of just otherwise obnoxious. Someone more interested in rules than freedom. Or we can see Jesus, you know, like the Love Island director. You know, the guy who only accepts those who look spotless. You know, that he only wants those who've got it sorted. He only wants the attractive people in. Well, as we look at John's gospel tonight, we're going to see Jesus in a different way. To see Jesus kind of when the cameras are turned off, when he's one-on-one with someone. And maybe tonight John wants us to step back from what we think Jesus is like, maybe to step back from what our friends tell us Jesus is like, and to allow Jesus to present him for himself. It's like taking a blindfold off and seeing, who does Jesus say he really is? And we're going to join the story at chapter 4. Hopefully you should have one of these bits of paper printed in front of you. This is chapter 4 of John's book. And Jesus is leaving the region of Judea and he's heading north, back up to Galilee. It's like he's in Kilnhurst and he wants to get to Leeds. But to get there, verse 5, he's got to go through this place called Samaria. Now, Samaria wasn't kind of some ordinary, innocent place. It was like the ancient equivalent of Barnsley, but just slightly worse. You know, it's the kind of place that you've got to go through, but no one really wants to. You know, you know the kind of place where you strap the kids in, you lock the doors, you get your head down, and you just drive, and you pray that you're going to get out the other side sooner rather than later. It's that kind of place. It wasn't just, you know, another region on the way. Samaria was a place once connected with God's plan, but people who now lived as arch enemies to the Jews. This collected group of foreigners who were looked down upon by everyone else as like the scum of the earth, the people that you wouldn't touch in the playground. No one wanted to go to Samaria. You know, if you've ever been to a panto, You know, the Samaritans are the guys that you're expected to kind of boo and hiss at. They're the guys that their very mention's meant to make you feel a little bit uneasy. And yet Jesus decides that he has to go through this area. He could have taken an alternative road, but instead he wanted to go and spend time with those people he thought needed him most. And so he journeys, verse 6, to this ancient well. This place is about 30 miles hard walk from Jerusalem. And he gets there and his disciples are tired and hungry. It's been a long, hard walk. And while they seem to head off in town to go to a Greg's, Jesus is sitting down beside this well, exhausted, catching his breath and feeling a bit worn out. And who walks around the corner but a woman from this town of Samaria. This unnamed woman, not just anyone, but an unnamed woman from a place that is supposed to be the archenemies. You know, representing all of the broken relations between her people and the Jews. You know, if you're wondering what it feels like, it's like being in a classroom when the head walks in. You know, when Karen walks into the room and you know you've done something wrong, it's like that feeling of, oh no, we're not supposed to be here. Or you're parking up, you're coming back to your car and you see this guy there. It's the kind of encounter that would have woken up the average Jew in a cold sweat. That kind of meeting you'd run a million miles from. And Jesus is sitting there in the middle of the midday sun, exhausted. And around the corner comes someone representing all of God's enemies. Now, how would you have reacted? How would you react if you go back to your car and you see this guy there? And yet, as we turn to John's account, he shows us something wonderful about Jesus. Because this woman approaches, a woman that the Jews wouldn't touch with a barge pole. And do you see what John tells us? He said Jesus moves towards her. You know, engaging her attention, drawing her into conversation. And do you see her shock? In verse 9, it's like she's trying to remind Jesus just how off reservation he is. You're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan. How can you ask me for a drink? Have you forgotten our people hate each other? Surely you can see there's an issue here, Jesus. And I wonder, just as we read this, that's one that we were wanting to shock us too. You know, this is more surprising than Chris Knowles finishing a talk on time. This is more surprising than walking down Kilnos High Street and you're seeing a Scot, and the Scot coming up to you, giving a big hug and a kiss. It's like, it's someone who doesn't do emotion suddenly doing it for you there. This is not supposed to happen. This is not what anyone would expect. And yet Jesus says, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you'd have asked him. And he would have given you living water. Do you see what Jesus has done? He's kind of turned things around. It's not that he doesn't know who she really is. It's not that he's forgotten that she's a Samaritan. He's fully aware and he's reached out to her deliberately. And yet his response is emphatic. If you knew who I was, Jesus says to this woman, you'd be the one asking me. As we look down in John's account a little bit later, we're going to see that Jesus knows this woman really well. He knows all about her background. And yet he's saying that if she knew who he really was, she'd be the one asking him for something. He's saying that he's got something that's as essential to us as a glass of water. Something without which this woman can't be truly free. She can never be truly satisfied. And she's come to this well kind of with a real physical thirst. And Jesus tells her what she really needs is freedom from a spiritual thirst. And so in the heat of the midday sun, Jesus, standing beside a well, reaches out to this woman and offers her the water of eternal life. And just picture her there for a moment, and she's somewhat astounded by this offer, not fully grasping what he's saying, but yet you can see her eyes just begin to wander around, because how on earth is Jesus going to get this water? He doesn't even have a bucket. You know, maybe Jesus, the sun's just got a little bit too hot. You've had a long walk. Maybe he's getting a little bit confused. You know, does this Jesus promise more than he can deliver? You know, is he the ancient equivalent of a Brexit bus, you know, full of promise that turns out to be utter nonsense? Is that what Jesus is up to? Well, as the conversation flips back to him, we see him kind of gently engaging her questions at verse 13. He doesn't dismiss her because she's not got it, but he gently explains a little bit more about what he means. You know, this woman has come to the well every day, and yet her thirst could never be truly satisfied with what comes from the ground. And yet Jesus is saying that the water he has offered her fulfills a much deeper thirst, gives her much more freedom than the freedom she's coming for. And look down at verse 15. Now she wants it. Now she really wants what Jesus has to offer. And yet he's not quite finished yet. She's latched onto something, but Jesus wants to make sure she's really got it. He's offered her a gift, but he wants to make sure she really gets what it is. You know, sometimes people can give us stuff and we're not quite sure what to do with it. Here's a little example. This little video clip I'm going to show you. Little caveat, this video is in German. But that's not going to put you off. All you need to know is the daughter says, "Hey, Dad, do you like the new iPad we got you for your birthday?" And the dad says, "Yeah, it's great." And so the daughter says, "Well, how are you getting on with the apps?" And the dad goes, "What apps?" Let's have a little look.
Sag mal, Papa, habe ich dich noch gar nicht gefragt. Wie kommst du denn eigentlich mit dem neuen iPad zurecht, was wir dir zum Geburtstag geschenkt haben?
Gut.
Mit den ganzen Apps kommst du klar?
Was denn für Apps? Geh mal bitte einen Schritt zur Seite.
There we go. That's a little example. Sometimes things could be such a good gift, and yet if we don't tell people how to use them, then you end up using an iPad as a chopping board, putting it in the washing machine, in the dishwasher. And so Jesus sees this woman, he's offered her this great gift, and he wants to make sure she knows what it really is that he's holding out to her. It's dead easy to think we get what Jesus is offering, and yet to miss the point. And so what he does is he makes it really personal. You know, connecting an offer that seems to be out of this world to something very much of this world. And here's where it connects so deeply with the idea of freedom that we're looking at tonight. Now, have a look at verse 16. It says, "Go, call your husband and come back." "Well, I don't have a husband," this woman replies. Well, he says, "Well, you're right when you say you don't have a husband. The fact is you've had five, and even now the man that you have is not your husband." Now, Jesus isn't trying to kind of rub salt in the wound here. He's not trying to shame her. But he's trying to draw her out, helping her to understand. He's got her attention by highlighting the thing right in front of her, that she's thirsty. And now he connects that with an even deeper thirst. She's come to find freedom from a spiritual thirst, and he offers her freedom for a spiritual thirst, using one conversation to open up another. Now, we want to be careful, I think, how we paint this woman. It's all too easy just to put her down as some sort of prostitute just jumping from bed to bed, but that's not really what John tells us. If anything, it seems like the opposite is the case. In a culture where it was acceptable for husbands just to abandon their wives, this woman seems to have been dropped one too many times. You know, used and abused, divorced and abandoned again and again and again and again. And even now, the man she's living with can't be bothered to marry her. She's a total outcast and a victim. And Jesus' words kind of cut through like a hot knife through butter. You know, she's been relatively unmoved until this point, and now she sees herself revealed. And just as she stood physically naked before those five men, now she's physically uncovered before Jesus. And I wonder if you're anything like me, it's so easy to ignore Jesus until it just gets a little bit personal. And we need him to connect the dots for us, to show this woman how she's desperately searching for freedom and satisfaction in relationships. You know, passed from one man to another, so thirsty that she'll accept in their abuse as part of the deal. Like the gambler going back again and again, hoping this time it'll be different. You know, the world's told her that freedom comes from kind of sexual fulfillment, a man at your side. And she's turned again and again to something that can't satisfy. Kind of moving from well to well, but just sipping salt water. And I wonder if that's where we connect in too, because I think we're in this story as well, but this woman represents us. She seems to have been thirsty for a relationship and thought, that's where I'm going to get my freedom and my satisfaction. And she's been broken. Now, for some of us, it might not be a relationship we're looking for. Like guys at school, it might be that you're looking for academic achievement, friendships, mates alongside you to go to A-levels, to go to university, to have a big friendship circle. For those of us who are a bit older, we might be looking to relationships still. It might be comfort or financial security, family, grandchildren. We think that's where I get my fulfillment and I get my freedom. That is what life is all about. But whatever it is, I wonder if Jesus wants us to look up today and call out to us as well as this woman that the things we turn to can never fully satisfy. We're putting a weight on those things that they can't bear. And so just like he reached out to this woman, he reaches out to us as well, calling us away from the salt water we might be sipping, away from the salt water of chasing popularity as the way we get our freedom, chasing influence, chasing family, to draw us back in to see that true freedom is found firstly and primarily in relationship with the God who gives living water. It's in the very kind of place of her need that Jesus met this woman. He understands what she really needs and he offers her true satisfaction that no one else could provide. And it's as this woman asks how he can offer her this true freedom that he tells her a little bit further down in our passage, in verses 21 to 24, that he's about to make a way for her to come back to God. His cross will break down the barriers, dealing with her sin, dealing with our sin, and guaranteeing his offer of eternal satisfaction is real, it's tangible, it makes a difference. It offers us the freedom that we can't find anywhere else. And see, he offers her the Messiah that this woman's been waiting for. He offers her the freedom that she's been longing for. And now, verse 26, she gets it. As Jesus says, I, the one standing before you, I'm the one who can do all of these things. See, John 4 is a story as we come into land. It's a story all about someone seeking freedom and yet weighed down by the way the world's told her she's going to find it. She's desperate for satisfaction in life and yet she's kind of caught in this web of captivity. And yet Jesus meets her in the burning midday sun and offers her this spring of eternal life. Do you remember the two ways we can get Jesus wrong? You know, we can see him as the kind of the harsh, judgmental old man, all about rules. Or we can see him as the Love Island director who only wants the perfect. And as we have a look at John chapter 4, what do we see? Here's a man who's gone out of his way to hold out something refreshing with real fulfillment to those who could get it nowhere else. To reach out to people like you and me who are looking for freedom in places that can never really give it to us. And as he gently engages her and draws her in, he offers her the greatest gift of all. I guess, you know, like the runner, at the guy at the side of the racetrack, holding out something that we're desperately thirsty for. And maybe you're here and you're really aware that you're thirsty and you're desperately looking for freedom that really satisfied because it doesn't seem to be coming anywhere else. Maybe you're searching for true freedom. Well, as we turn to John's account in this passage, we see that Jesus goes out of his way to find people like me and people like you and to offer us the freedom won for us at the cross. Here's a woman who saw his offer and jumped at it. And it's the same offer that's held out to us. And so let me leave you with a question as we turn back to our tables. As we see Jesus' encounter with this woman and the true freedom he offers, do we want to be like the sailors sipping salt water? Or do we want to take hold of Jesus' offer of true freedom instead? We're going to turn back to a few questions on our tables. A few cards will come around, and I'll put them up on the screen as we keep thinking through what does true freedom look like and how does Jesus give us something that we couldn't get anywhere else.